Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Season 3 of Mozart in the Jungle opens Friday on Amazon. What's ahead for this Golden Globe winning dramedy? Co-developer, executive producer, writer, and director Roland Conrad joins me next in an internet radio exclusive from San Francisco. Time to revisit the post-teen adventures of Gary Morgenstern. We last connected a few years ago. He was writing books and plays. Now Mr. M is entering the sphere of science fiction radio. We will reconnect with him next half hour. Also ahead, very superstition at sci-fi, and our classic trivia question of the week with a brand new prize in play. Hello everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Delighted to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the program All About Television. A little bit of a gray sky outside here in the Big Apple, 45 degrees at the top of this hour, and we're delighted to have you with us for the program All About the Tube. So wonderful guests coming your way over the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's very simple. Raise your voice and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the world, right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you're shy about using the phone, it's no problem with us, because we got a chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And we welcome guests 956 and Rick Webb, our good friend from Philadelphia, already in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Roman Coppola will be live with us from San Francisco after these news notes. Sci-fi is getting superstition as a brand new original drama from Mario Van Peebles. The premise, a family that owns a funeral home outside New Orleans, investigates unusual happenings or phenomena triggered by a being known as, and I quote, The Dredge, unquote. Van Peebles will co-write and direct all 13 episodes and act in a few of them. Production starts early next year, and the series is anticipated to get on sci-fi next fall. Jack Maxwell, a.k.a. Travel Channel's Booze Traveler, will be involved in a Best Bar spinoff next year. Maxwell will roam the United States for, you guessed it, those Best Bars. Booze Traveler will begin its third series on Travel Channel December 12th. LA Network appears ready to bust some new series loose in 2017. About to wrap 2016 with no major new scripted or unscripted series taking off, officials at the Robert Rodriguez Preside Over channel hint that there is a number of new series in both categories that will be announced soon. And HBO will get the third and final season of the award-winning series The Leftovers on its air next April. The series won a Peabody Award in 2015. And that is news notes for today. Now joining us live from San Francisco in an internet radio exclusive, the co-developer, executive producer, writer, and director of Mozart in the Jungle, starting Season 3 Friday on Amazon Studios, available on smart TV sets and smart devices from Roku to Chromecast, Roman Coppola. Roman, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for including me.
You're very welcome. Talk about how Season 3 happened. Usually when we talk to people on this program, it's usually about how you get the season off the ground or the show off the ground, or sometimes the second season off the ground. In the case of the third season, our characters, we've come to know from what they do in the classical music scene here in New York, decide to take a trip.
Yeah, we thought that it'd be fun to shake it up. And, you know, early on, Gael asked us, myself, Jason, Paul, and Will, the other creative team, he said, oh, wouldn't it be interesting if his character, Rodrigo, got involved with an opera? And so that sparked our curiosity. And so we sort of took that lead from him, and we cooked up a story which takes him to Venice, Italy, and getting involved with an opera singer. So that was the little kernel of the idea that we followed.
How long did it take to put a season together in terms of, let's say, after the second season starts running? When do you go into the third season? How do you flesh it out? How long do you flesh it out?
Well, the way it works for us is that we released our show last year at the end of the year, just after Christmas, I believe, and then this season's coming out in just a week. It's December 9th, I believe, or less than a week. a few days. And now we're already talking about season four in early discussions, talking, planning. And so, it's a full-time job. So right now we're thinking about the next season. We basically have, maybe 3 months to let it gestate and figure it out and kind of get that initial writing working. And then, by March or so, we'll be thinking, planning the actual shooting preparations. We shoot in the summer, and then we're editing in the fall and finishing all up in the, late fall. And so it's a full-time job.
Did you shoot the third season in Venice?
Half the season takes place in Venice, approximately, and then the other half takes place in New York, which is the home of our symphony.
Robin, how do you want the characters to evolve this year as compared to season one and two?
It's sort of an intuitive thing. We're not too, this show is sort of distinctive in that it doesn't, the way we as the writers, the kind of creators approach it, is it's very loose and intuitive, and a lot depends on the interests of the actors and what they suggest. And we just sort of follow our noses. We don't really have a prescription that we follow. And there was never like a Bible, for example, that we set out early on to follow year after year. So it's kind of by the seat of the pants would be one way to say it. We just kind of follow our noses and see where it leads us. And so I'm kind of stalling a bit because it's mysterious how it comes about. And we just kind of uncover it as we get together and hash it out and work together.
Given so many roles you have, you co-develop the show, you co-write it, you co-direct it, you executive produce it. How do you like the seat of the pants style, the fact that you consider doing a season, sort of a season of discovery, as opposed to having everything all set to go, all the scripts set to go, and so forth?
It's much more my nature, and I can speak for Jason Schwartzman, who's my cousin. We work a lot together, and the whole point of doing creative things is to satisfy that curiosity that you have about things, learn about things, follow your intuition. And for example, when you mention there's a show set in the world of classical music, they sort of assume that we're very knowledgeable about that. And we do have a certain appreciation for it growing up in a family that valued music, and several of our relatives have been and continue to be involved in music. My great uncle, Anton Coppola, who is a New Yorker and who is a working conductor still at age 99. He's preparing a show after his 100th birthday in March. So anyway, we have a connection to music. But what I meant to say was that although we have something ingrained in us from our upbringing that's pointed towards music and a love for it, we're not deeply knowledgeable about it. We're just have a bleak sense of things, as many people do. Classical music is kind of intimidating. So by doing the show, we've come to learn about so much about the music, the composers, the world of music, and that's what drew us in. So the point is that this is a show of discovery for us too, learning about how to navigate through this and asking questions and so on. So that's sort of, I think, kind of refreshing for certain viewers, where they kind of see that it's not a rigid prescriptive thing, but just kind of flowing and unfolding.
Mozart in the Jungle, season number 3, happens this Friday on Amazon Studios, and you can get Amazon Studios programming, including not only the award-winning Mozart in the Jungle, which won 2 Golden Globe Awards earlier this year, Best Comedy Series and Best Performance by an Actor to Comedy, Gail Garcia Bernard, who, by the way, was on the Late Late Show with James Corden last night on CBS as one of their key guests for the night, but also Transparent, which is going to be season 3 also as well. Great series from Jill Soloway and much, much more. You can get Amazon Studios product on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. We've got Roman Coppola with us. He is a co-developer, executive producer, writer, director. He's live from San Francisco this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum will be with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio or ProtoWall.television, usually on Mondays and Fridays at this very hour, the special Tuesday edition for this week. And we're happy to have you aboard. If you have a question or comment for Roman, give us a ring at 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Guest 956, and our good friend from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, is in the room. Friday at our regular time, we will focus on a new series that's premiering tomorrow night on Hulu. It's called Shut Eye. Stars Jeffrey Donovan of Burn Notice fame as a magician who gets into a freak accident and then becomes very psychic. The program was created and produced by Les Baum. A very familiar name, particularly if you know Western called Rawhide. We'll explain that on Friday when Les himself, who also did the classic miniseries Taken with Steven Spielberg, first cable miniseries to win an Emmy Award in that category. Les Baum, creator and executive producer of Shut Eye. He's live with us Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Given your background and your family's background in both music and in filmmaking, would you have done a show like Mozart, even if you had not run across the book that the series is based on?
You know, it's hard to say. You know, when Jason, who discovered that book, mentioned to me, said, "Hey, here's a book that's a memoir that's the sort of tells about the inner workings of an orchestra and all the power struggles and creative conflicts and so on." When he described it to me, it was like, oh, it seemed so natural for a very rich show. You know, there's so much going on between the relationships with the donors and the artists and the questions of whether, you know, how music should be presented and how much reverence you should show to the classic stuff versus, you know, presenting new music. It just was a very rich world. So it immediately caught my eye. Now, it's hard to say, had I not been, aware of that book, whether that idea would have occurred to us or not, I can't say. But, you know, a show set in classical music, when we uncovered a little bit about it, it seemed like such a natural place to set a show. And, you know, furthermore, a lot of people might say, oh, well, I don't really know about classical music, or it's not particularly interesting. It's not part of their world. But, and what I tend to say when they may say that is that, it's a classical music group is like any kind of workplace. There's the boss, and there's the power structures, and there's the hierarchies, and there's the act of getting along with this kind of extended family all coming together to do this one thing, which is, you know, rather a common thread with so many people's work and lives. So as odd as it may be to some, it's rather familiar when you scratch under the surface.
Well, we got a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow. We televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello? Oh, our caller just dropped off. Let's see if we can try to get that person back. Talk about working with Gael Garcia Bernal, who is an amazing actor and very much, I thought, deserved the Golden Globe for Best Actor in a comedy. But also Laurie Kripke, who is the person who is playing the character that is also the subject of the book that the show comes from, and what it was like to build the show around both of them and the rest of the cast.
Well, we're very lucky to have our cast. You know, we have a really wonderful cast, and the two you mentioned, Lola Kirk and Gael, of course, the stars. But we have Bernadette Peters, we have Malcolm McDowell, we have Saffron Burroughs. You know, we have a really nice group of people, super talented. Gael is a very charming and charismatic person, and I think so much of his real personality kind of comes through in the character he's portraying. You know, the Rodrigo character, someone who is a bit of a shaman, who's kind of uses his spirited creativity to solve problems, and sometimes it gets him into problems, and it's all kind of comes out of who Gael is as a person. He's very, obviously very smart, but he's, you know, very playful and kind of has a puckish, unexpected quality of things that he chooses to do. So we rely on that, and he's really come to, you know, kind of create that character with us. Lola is, rather different. She's of course very playful and has a wonderful sense of humor, but, you know, she's more grounded, and I think that's a nice contrast between those two characters. But she's a you know, really fantastic collaborator. She's has an intuitive manner of performing. You know, she doesn't need to have a lot of lines or big scenes to really be kind of in the moment. A lot of actors kind of need to be doing something very proactive in order to kind of feel at ease in front of the camera. And she's one of the rare talents as a performer who can just be kind of present in the moment. And she's very engaging, and you wish to you know, you're drawn in by her persona. So anyway, different acting styles, different characters, and, you know, we're very lucky to have both those players at the heart of our show.
Mm-hmm. The classical music world, both here in New York and beyond, have had now two seasons to see the show. What do they think of it? What do they tell you and your cast and your crew about how you portray their world?
Well, by and large, I've been exposed to, you know, positive comments. You know, people have, you know, particularly noteworthy people in this in the musical scene have wished to be part of our show. You know, on the, in the very first episode, the pilot, Joshua Bell, participated. He was, you know, the first person to kind of become involved. But in later seasons, we've had Long Long, who's, you know, incredibly noted a pianist. We've had a Placido Domingo in this new season, and I'm blanking, but you know, several other noteworthy people that have enjoyed participating. And I think one of the things they value is the sense of humor. Well, I should mention Gustavo Dudamel, who was in our last season. So, you know, people in that scene appreciate that there's humor and that we don't, we're not uptight. We're not, you know, because classical music has a little bit of a, there's a bit of a general feeling that it's impenetrable, that it's somehow stuffy or fussy. And so many of these folks that we've met have a wonderful sense of humor and enjoy showing other sides of themselves. So, you know, in one episode last year, we had Long Long playing ping pong, and you know, it was just they've really enjoyed that we've showed other sides of the classical music world, that these are real people.
Mozart in the Jungle is
No, forgive me. No, there's just been an appreciation for showing a diverse range of elements that make up that world.
And that world is captured in Season 3 of Mozart in the Jungle, the award-winning series from Amazon Studios that premieres this Friday on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. So whether you have a smart set in the likes of Samsung or Vizio or Sharp, or smart TV devices like Roku, Google Chromecast, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, of course, others as well, you can get the series when it premieres the new season this Friday. Roman Coppola is the co-developer, executive producer, writer, and director. He's live with us from San Francisco this half hour right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum here with you live from NYC on the other end of the U.S. of A. Here on Blog Talk Radio. Delighted to have you aboard on this Tuesday afternoon. If you have a question or comment, get a ring at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up later this month on our program, speaking of Roku, we'll have one of the key executives, Lloyd Clark, will be with us. We'll find out what he thinks the world of smart TV and smart TV sets are going in 2017. And also later this month, we will have rescheduled from last month the cinematographer on the popular CW series DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Malum Fox-Williams. That's all coming up, plus more, later this month, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. You have a family, of course, that has a very famous patriarch, Francis Ford Coppola, writer, director, extraordinaire. I'm wondering, what did you learn from his talent that you apply with your series?
Well, it's hard to quantify just in a sentence. You know, growing up around my dad, I did a lot of work with him as an apprentice, in effect, you know, being on his sets as a kid and helping out as over the years growing up. So, you know, you learn by osmosis, observing things, seeing things. You know, I think one of the things my dad always valued and expressed clearly was the value of good writing and the value of good, talented performers and trusting those performers to interpret the material, you know, from their heart and to not, to guide them, but to not impose things on them. So, you know, good writing and good actors is basically the two, the gas and the fire, oxygen, whatever it is to make something happen, catalyzing it. So that's something that he was very clear about, you know, and, growing up, we would often listen to, you know, on the weekends, he would blast opera music, usually, you know, some Puccini or something like that. So that kind of thrall that music puts you in, something that comes from growing up in our family. But, it's hard to specify. He's a lover of creative things and a curious person. And so I think some of those instincts are imparted on me as well.
Mm-hmm. You have a very big writer's room, and you have a pretty fair director's room also. And it's pretty equal, too, men and women, 50-50. What was it like to deal with a multi-writer, multi-director environment where you all have responsibility for getting this series to go, giving its momentum?
Well, it is like a big workshop. You know, the writing duties are divvied up. There's the, people have different roles. There's the sort of creation of the basic storylines and the basic thrust of what the characters are going through. And then there's the interpreting that in the form of a screenplay. And often that's touched by various people, rewriting, adjusting, balancing based on what's happening, you know, because often you're shooting while you're writing. So things inflect upon it. But, you know, it's hard to describe. Basically, you know, there's a lot of people who are involved, and it's our job as the executive producers to guide it and, you know, have it be on tone as much as possible. Some of the directors we've worked with in the past, so that is helpful because they have that history with the show. Others are new, but, you know, we trust them to interpret it. And, you know, in television, the director is, you know, has a certain authority on the set and guides the actors and the material and interprets it. But often the executive producers, have a lot of influence with the edit and how it's the final version is interpreted. So, you know, there's a lot of ways that we try to guide the material and touch it to be as, you know, as much in the spirit of the show as we can.
All right. Well, we have a call. Now we're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Simon. It's Rick Lab calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, great to have you, and you're on the line with Roman Coppola, both on the jungle. Go ahead.
Hey, Roman. I'm wondering, since Simon just spoke about the writer's room and everything, like the reviews for this show being in the third season have been amazing. And so I'm wondering when you first start writing the show and you come up with a series Bible and like story arcs, was this third season really planned out in the beginning, or has it really just evolved? Because it seems to be going amazing places this year.
Thank you. Yes, you know, we never made a Bible, in fact, and each season has been built, you know, from the ground up during that time period. So now we're thinking about season 4, just, you know, thinking about it now, and we'll develop it and cook it up over the coming 2 or 3 months or so, and then it'll be start to be written. So, we're lucky in that, when Amazon wished to go forward, you know, we did a pilot a couple of years back, and then when they wished to go forward, they never expected some expanded Bible that prescribed what it was going to be over several seasons. So I think that's been a benefit to the show because, we're not following some guideline that was set in advance. And I think people kind of smell that a little bit. I mean, many shows are served by it, and that's a great thing to have that guideline of where you're going. But we've sort of gone a little bit more by the seat of the pants, and I think our show is, kind of benefits from it because it has a unexpected quality I think people value. So hopefully I answered your question. But, we just sort of do the best we can in the moment.
Oh, cool. Thank you. And that's wishes with the show, and I have to catch
you
up on some past episodes, but definitely going to, you know, follow it through the season.
Great. Hope you enjoy it.
Thank you. Thanks, Simon.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Rick.
Thank
a pleasure.
You.
Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And when it comes on to season 4 and beyond, is it a wish, if not for you, then your fellow cast and crew members, that perhaps every year your cast goes to a different location, Or do you see maybe season four and later seasons, you go back to New York, or you go to other, you explore, let's say, other aspects of the classical music scene in other cities, whether San Francisco, where you are now, or Los Angeles, or Houston, Chicago. Do you see this sort of being as much a travelogue as it is a New York-based dramedy?
Well, it's a combination. You know, last season, season two, we were had a show at the Hollywood Bowl. So that was in L.A., of course. You know, in the classical music world, it's a global phenomenon, and any, you know, major conductor is often, you know, performing with the symphony they lead, but also doing other appearances. And there's tours, of course. We've been traded a tour in Latin America last season. And, you know, this season we have a group of episodes in Venice, Italy. So it's definitely, you know, kind of part of the world that travels involved. So I expect in the coming season and seasons that there will be more travel. You know, the home is always New York, and that's where the, you know, our fictitious orchestra is based. So that's always going to be part of the setting and the storyline. But we want to, you know, take advantage of all the exotic locales. And, you know, there's so many different musicians that are, you know, soloists that come through, and different appearances and festivals, and all sorts of ways that, you know, music is exposed all over. So we want to touch upon that as much as we can.
Season 3 of Mozart in the Jungle. It opens this Friday on Amazon, and you can get Amazon Studios programming, Mozart, Transparent, many other shows as well. If you have a smart TV set or a smart TV device like Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Chromecast, etc., etc., etc. And if you want more details about the program online, here's where you go, studios.amazon.com. That's studios.amazon.com. Season 3 opens this Friday, and Season 4, and hopefully many, many more to come. Roman Kaprov, co-developer, executive producer, writer, director of the series, we really appreciate you coming aboard. It's been a pleasure this last half hour. All the best to your casting crew for a fantastic third season. As I said, many more to come. You have a charming show, and it's a pleasure to watch.
Thank you so much.
You are very welcome. Take care. Have a great, great week ahead.
All right, thanks so much. All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Roman Coppola joining us live from San Francisco. Our new classic trivia question of the week with a new prize in play coming your way after this message from the fine folks at Audible.com. One of the big bestsellers right now is Bruce Springsteen's autobiography, Born to Run, and you can get an audiobook version of that wonderful tome with Mr. S. In fact, narrating it from start to finish. If you get a 30-day subscription to Audible.com, that can be your free book, and you can be part of a great sound experience when you do. Audible.com from Amazon.com is the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. It inspires as well, too. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now through Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, it's audibletrial.com/televised, you can get one free audiobook and make that choice Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen or any of the other great titles around, and you can test it out for 30 days, excuse me. And remember, because it's Amazon.com running the show, the customer service is top of the universe. So check out Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen or any of the wonderful 180,000-plus titles available to you 24/7, all categories included, at audible.com. Remember, this is the URL, audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised. Get yourself a great sound experience for the bargain. And now it's time for our regular feature, the Classic Trivia Question of the Week. We had a big winner last week, our first in several months, Doug Frazier of New York. He won not one, not two, but three books as prizes. So we have a brand new prize and a brand new question. If you're first with the correct answer to this question, you will win a wonderful book from the FAQ lineup from Applause. It's called Britcom's FAQ, all about the great comedies of British television, past and present. And here's the question, which, by the way, is about British comedy. Name the female member of Monty Python's Flying Circus. Name the female member of Monty Python's Flying Circus. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and, of course, your mailing address. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win Britcom's FAQ, published by Applause Theater and Cinema Books. It's one of the great FAQ titles focusing on the wonderful world of television. And if you just missed the question, no problem. You can find it posted tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. And speaking of Twitter, you can also use Twitter to respond. Here's the handle to use. It's TWBT, hashtag TWBT. That Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. The folks invite you to create your own social soundtrack anytime you like. Check it out from Marty Monaco and the crew over there at www.hopscotch.com. That's www.hopscotch.com. And be in to win. That's how you can win BritCon's FAQ. So remember, if you're first and you're correct, you win. So play along with us. We'd love to have you for the ride. This is Tomorrow We Televise. We are the Talk All About Television, and we're with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here, exclusive on Blog Talk Radio. And if you want to catch up an episode you missed, very simple. We give you two ways to do it. Go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise, blogtalkradio.com/televise, or check out the podcast version at iTunes.com and Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. You can download it to your smartphone or tablet and take us on the go. And if you get it on Apple TV, you can watch as well as hear us. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order that wonderful device with over 9,000 apps online. When we come back, one of our favorite guests who's away from the TV scene is back with us, Gary Rubenstein. What's he up to now? How about science fiction radio? We'll get to that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your offer online after hours. Check out the world of automobiles with their wonderful host and guests Thursdays, various times, right here, online after hours on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to meet you available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow We Televise for this Tuesday afternoon, December 2016. Simon Applebaum here with you. Delighted you're with us along for the ride. Another great guest coming away in the half hour ahead. And we invite you to be part of the program. Just give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you don't know where he is, find it at our wonderful homepage. It's blogtalkradio.com/televise. Most of the time, this program is all about the world of television. But once in a great while, we like to go off the beaten path, and we certainly have done so over the years with the next voice you are about to hear. He is a former official at A&E Networks, did public relations for Lifetime, most recently Sci-Fi, but a couple of years ago he decided to bend his life into various directions. When we last got a hold of him, he was writing books, he was writing plays on the New York theater scene, and now he is doing something different with his life, science fiction radio, a new series available on the web, called Mad Mel and the Meridians. I hope I got that right, but we'll find out in a moment. Joining me live here in New York, Gary Morgenstein. Gary, great to have you back.
Hi, Simon. Delighted to be here. How are you today?
Very, very well, thank you. It seems that you're in a way going back to your sci-fi roots with this new radio drama. Why did you decide to take that course?
Well, Mad Mel and the Meridians was nominated for a number of awards when it went on stage back in 2011. At the Midtown International Theater Festival. And it's a play, basically the play is about the Meridians, the evil aliens, who decide to invade Earth, and they're led by their dictator, the Donal. Now, don't tell me where I got that from, you know. And by radio. Because in the digital era, it's one of the last outposts of really using your fertile imagination. There's no CGI, of course, no special effects. It's really up to the to you to allow the listener to truly imagine it's like reading a book. And I thought, well, wouldn't this be wonderful to adapt this to radio? And I got together with Mike Sargent, who has his own radio show on WBAI, and Mike has directed and produced a number of audio dramas and radio shows in the past, and we adapted it into radio. And it's just so much fun. We recorded it in Manhattan with outstanding cast, and it's very interesting when, you know, when you're doing a radio play versus a stage play, you have to. It makes more demands on the actors and also on the writer. For example, you can't just have someone do a double take because it doesn't work. You can't have the visual, so you need the special effects, and you need to insert certain language. You can't say, "Why are you wearing that?" For example, why are you wearing that red dress? And it's just fascinating, and to it's so old-fashioned. It's like being back in the days of Orson Welles, to be in the studio and see the actors clustered around the table and with the microphones and then the headsets on. It's a wonderful experience.
And Gary, in the 1950s, when television was in its first major decade and radio was sort of fading into its last act, one of the fascinating things was that science fiction became a major source of radio drama. You had programs like Dimension X and its sequel, X-1. They had relatively short shelf lives. I believe Dimension X ran like 2-3 years, X-1 ran 3 or 4. You had also the Columbia Workshop, which was also getting into science fiction. But you had the great science fiction writers of the day, like Theodore Sturgeon, Robert Heinlein, Isaac Asimov, and Ray Bradbury, not only having their stories adapted, but they actually wrote the scripts for their radio adaptations. I'm wondering, before you went into this, did you have a chance to listen to some of those old radio programs of the 50s?
Well, not of the 50s, but certainly Firefly Theater. And certainly you don't even have to go back to the stories from the 50s, because little known, radio dramas are booming. If you move in America's heartland, there's an enormous surge of radio dramas where people are putting it up on the podcasts and doing their dramas and their comedies right there. So it's thriving. It's just, unfortunately, it has not reached the mass where people know how much about it. If you love radio, you know about it. And there's a wealth of information and a wealth of talent out there now. Look, in Britain, for example, the BBC has had a long tradition of reviewing radio. And maybe it's more an American thing where we need to be gratified instantly. You know, the whole MTV video mentality. But there's an enormous amount of talent out there now. It's great. It's thriving. It's like almost like another golden age of radio.
I believe Twilight Zone, there's a series, I think, either on NPR or an independent radio provider that's been doing Twilight Zone scripts, adapting for radio, and I believe some other, and I think there's also an original science fiction radio series on either commercial or public radio that an independent producer is doing.
Well, there you go. And also, if you're going to do radio, radio drama, what better genre than science fiction? Because it is so huge and so broad. I was always amused when you ask people, do you like science fiction? And as often as not, they might wrinkle their face because they think, oh, well, it's just about spaceships. And they don't realize the breadth of the genre and the many different kinds of stories. That's not all about, you know, aliens and spaceships. I mean, my play is about that, but it's also about political satire as well. So we have aliens, and we have, I mean, basically what the story is that this famous writer, Mel Worthington, pompous man, has made a lot of money making up stories about the Meridians. And so with the ancient aliens, and I'm part alien. What he didn't realize, he stumbles upon the truth that the Meridians are real. And what the basic thread is that the politics of it is that governments lie to their people throughout the galaxy and throughout the universe. So what we do is we talk about there's aliens, and there's a difference, obviously, between alien cultures and mindset and ambitions. But there's also things that are very similar, and things like courage and disloyalty and loyalty and even love transcend. So I'm trying to make a statement about our time. Some people might be different, and you might not like them, and you might think they're an enemy, and you might fear them. But at the end of the day, we all are life forms, and we probably have more in common than we think. And plus, it also helps when you do it with a sense of humor. And when you have a wonderful cast, as I did, it makes the job a lot easier and more fun, of course.
One part allegory, one part science fiction, one part great cast, one part great humor, that is Mad Mel and the Meridians. And you can hear it on the web right now at this site, MadMelSavesTheWorld.com. MadMelSavesTheWorld.com. We've got the first responsible for it, former publicist for networks like A&E, Lifetime, and Sci-Fi, Gary Morgenstein, our very good friend. First time he's with us on the program in a couple of years, and we've got him live right now from New York here on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum here with you live from the Big Apple, where it's 45 degrees at the top of the hour. Delighted you're with us. You have a question or a comment for Gary, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. Your catchers across the country or around the universe right here on Blog Talk Radio. Or put your comment or question in the chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. It's at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We're back in our regular time slot Friday at 3 o'clock on this Friday. And my lead guest will be the creator executive producer of the new Hulu series that premieres tomorrow night. It's their last original one of the year. It's called Shut Eye, starring Jeffrey Donovan and a bird note the same as a, well, you might say, a magician who develops a whole different career in a psychic way. Les Brohm is the creator executive producer. If the name sounds familiar in science fiction terms, he was the person behind Taken, the Steven Spielberg-produced miniseries that, for sci-fi, was their biggest Emmy Award winner. Why? It was the first cable miniseries to win the Emmy Award for that category of program. Les Brohm of Shut Eye and Taken, live with me Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Sci-Fi, your former network, last week launched a series called Incorporated from Matt Damon and Ben Affleck about how climate change affects Earth to the point where it becomes a parallel split planet. You have the green zone and the red zone. The green zone is where all the well-to-do people live, climate is wonderful, and then you have the ravaged red zone. But if you were to do that on radio, as you're attempting to do with your series, you have to really imagine the world. You can't, you don't see it, you hear it. You have to, like, make the mind picture, if you will. And for some people, it could be a real advantage, and for some people, it could be a disadvantage. How do you try in your series to make it an advantage for the listener to really grasp the world and the story?
Well, special effects, the sound effects are great. Not the special effects, but the sound effects. And the thing about radio is that you want to lean into it heavily. You almost want to be, I mean, cheesy is probably the wrong word, but you also want to be a little larger than life. It's almost, probably it's closest akin to theater, the a little exaggeration. The takes might be a little exaggerated. The voices might be loudest because you want to hear them in the back row. And you want to be able to see their expressions. And so on radio, you have to take it up, ratchet up that much more. And in science fiction, what you have to do is you have to make the implausible plausible. You have to take people, for example, we have two Meridians who come to Earth, and we have three humans. Now, we have something called Meridian Safe Sex, where one of the characters, main characters, Flem, played by the remarkable Jordan Auslander, is trying to impress this woman and to show her that he has certain tricks. Now, on stage, what you could do, of course, is you just have him on stage, and he's moving his fingers, and she's squirming in delight. Well, in radio, you can't do that, so you have to have the sound effects. And what also helps is when you have a wonderful actor like Marlene Villafane, who is able to have wonderful orgasms. So you need things like that to take it to another level, because you just can't have – now, if you want to go back, you want to talk about radio and sound effects and genius. They say one of the longest takes – last takes in radio history was Jack Benny, and we're going back into the 30s, because he had the tradition, he had the reputation of being cheap. So when a robber says your money or your life, he doesn't say anything. Builds and builds and builds the laughter. You could do that on radio, you see, but you need to set it up. And with radio, it's all the foundation. You must take the listener into your mind straight away. You do it with cool music. You do it with cool voiceover. It's just creating a world, but they have to participate. And you have to love radio. And because like I said, it's kind of like reading a book. You can sit there and you just listen and you become one with it. You don't have it like a movie shouting at you or 3D. It's like, whoa, you know, you don't get a headache listening to the radio.
How many episodes have you done, Gary? And when it comes to your cast, when did you find that there was a cohesive cast that was really into, as you are, into doing radio and really getting the rhythm? Because radio really does have its own rhythm. Radio drama has its own rhythm, where you say you have to speak faster, you have to have maybe a higher tone or a higher pitch, higher volume, maybe exert more energy than you would do before a television or film camera.
Well, I'm lucky, first of all, I started with a wonderful director, Mike Sargent, who knows the medium, knows what's required, how the script has to sound, and the sound effects how the words have to sound, how the atmosphere has to be created. And we also got all the cast had done radio. Hayes de Villiers, who is a South African film and stage actor, he was in Mandela last year. Marlena Villafane, who is a wonderful actress and singer. Eric Rausch, who was a stage actor. Jordan Auslander is the only one who's never done radio, but he originated his role of Flem, the Meridian, on stage. And then Isabella Boucher, who has also done radio. So I was lucky that I started with four or five people who have done radio, who understood it. And we started off with a rehearsal. It was more like just a reading of the script and getting to know each other and getting a sense of how far a person will go, what they need to do. And you need to find the voice. Now, Eric probably had the most demanding role because he was the evil Delonte. He was the evil Chancellor, Alonix, who comes to Earth. And so he could have either done it with a big, booming voice, kind of like, you know, out of Flash Gordon. But what he found was it was kind of cool. It was almost like he was like an alien Nazi. He had this slight German tinge to his voice, and it was much softer, but very menacing, not Ming, quiet and menacing. So what you want to do is like all actors, I mean, there are certain things that are very similar. They have to find their footing. They have to find out what the character is. Marlene has this great accent that she developed, which she would have developed for film or television or stage. But you know what the medium is, and you dig into it, and you find it there, and then it suddenly happens. And then what also was fun, because there's also music, there's singing, because I've written songs for the Meridians. So now I'm not really a songwriter. Don't ask me to sing. I could hum a few bars of Life on the Stars. But pretty much I said, okay, here's the song, and here's the lyrics. And so what was wonderful, like Eric created his own lyrics in Meridian, because I'm developing the Meridian language. And Jordan did Pleasure Bubbles, a song called Pleasure Bubbles, which is the Meridian testicles. I'll be clean. I'll keep it clean. That's as far as I'm going to go. Don't worry. But Jordan sang like an alien Jerry Lewis on crack. And it was wonderful. I mean, it's really quite amazing to listen. So that was the writer saying, okay, here's the start, and then they just took it away. I didn't tell Jordan to come up that voice, but he's a wonderful actor. I didn't tell Eric to do it that way, but he's a wonderful actor. Or Hayes, you know, to just sing a certain way. And that's a beauty as a writer and as a creator, because I've written novels. As you know, I'm writing, finishing the first novel of a science fiction trilogy, which is actually set in the 22nd century after America has lost World War III to Islam. And so when you write a novel, that's just you. You don't have to worry about involving anyone else except the reader. It's just one-on-one. It's like a basketball pickup game. But in other mediums like radio and stage, you have that. You must allow your words to be taken by the actors and by the director and turned into something sometimes a little different. And it's a wonderful feeling.
Mandel and the Meridians. It's the new science fiction radio series that's available on an internet place near you. And that place is MadMelSavesTheWorld.com. MadMelSavesTheWorld.com. Gary Morganston is the writer, producer, everything else of the kitchen sink, too. And maybe get the sound effect in as well. Our good friend, formerly one of the great publicists at Lifetime, A&E, and Sci-Fi, and other cable services. He's with us live from New York right here this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Live, you're with us on a special Tuesday edition of the program All About Television. We're normally with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Gary in the time remaining, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, we have a Tomorrow Be Televised weekly segment most weeks on BK Live here in the New York area. BK Live is the noon hour talk culture variety show about all things Brooklyn and beyond, and you can catch it weekdays, Monday through Thursdays from noon to 1 local time on Brick TV. Brick TV is available in New York, throughout the city on Time Warner, on Verizon Fios TV, on Charter in both Manhattan and Brooklyn, on the other cable systems in DKLYN, that's Cablevision Systems and RCN. And you can also get it online at youtube.com/BrickTV. All of our Smarter Satellite segments on BK Live this year are available there. It's youtube.com/BrickTV. And I want to thank everybody around the nation who catches the YouTube segments. We've had, in some cases, over 1,000 views, and we appreciate you for that. You can also check out my Tomorrow We Tell Live columns at MediaNotes.com, the popular media analysis and commentary site from our good friend Jack Myers. So check it out, MediaNotes.com, available 24/7. Since you raised the point, Gary, how do you create an alien language?
Well, it helps to be a little crazy like me. Just by the way, the series is also available if you have iTunes as well. What I've also done with a renowned extraterrestrial expert, Dr. Ilil Arbel, is we've launched a new line of books called Ancient Aliens, Meridians, and Anunnaki. Now, the Anunnaki are mentioned in the Bible as in the film. Now, you have to believe that ancient aliens visited Earth, and that they shared technology and science and culture and perhaps even interbreeded. And some believe that they are still on Earth. There's evidence, or if you want to believe it, that they're called the Greys and they live underwater. So in this book, we go into the history and the cultures and the religions and even the holidays of the Meridians and the Anunnaki. So I am looking at creating or recreating the language, and you have to be very careful. You have to use the same words. We have a whole culture of the Meridian gods, for example, and like, what do they look like? The Anunnaki are very handsome. Assuming they interbreeded with Earthlings, it would be like, you know, George Clooney and Brad Pitt are certainly Anunnaki. The Meridians are kind of more nebbishy. It's more like, you know, Woody Allen. And so when you want to create a language, you have to say, okay, what does this sound like? And I think Meridian is perhaps a little more harsh. It's almost Germanic. And if you assume that they were here long ago and influenced Earth, it would maybe have some influence on Yiddish. And you could trace back some holidays on Earth to the Meridians and Anunnaki presence. I mean, look, there's so many stories, okay, about pictures of in caves, for example, similar pictures of people who look like astronauts. Now, where did the ancient peoples come up with this? It's kind of remarkable, right? Why would it be so similar across the world? This is, you know, long before we had Twitter. So no one was about to, you know, run off and say, oh, did you see that? It's like pretty segmented societies, if they shared similar experiences. And it's kind of fascinating if you believe that there is other life on other planets. And given that there's billions of star systems throughout the galaxy, I would think logically there would be other life.
Yeah.
Gary, we have about a minute left. How many more episodes to go? And could this be your comeback vehicle for sci-fi? Maybe as like a one-shot special, if not as a series?
Oh, I don't know. You want to pitch it for me?
Well, you know, it is interesting. Sci-fi has been our running theme all episode long. We kicked it off with the news that Barry Van Peebles, with his production company, now has a new series coming up next year on the network called Superstition, which sounds really, really good.
Yes.
And, of course, I mentioned the incorporated situation. And, you know, we end up with science fiction radio, and the premise looks, you know, sounds like if it's a winner on radio, it could be easily adapted for television.
Maybe. Well, I think you could package it for me, Simon. You could take 15%.
So anyway, how many more
go.
Episodes coming
We're
up?
Cutting a deal in front of all your listeners. All right, this is fine. You go. You take the meeting. Pitch it. I'm happy for that. But you know that.
All right.
Okay, there we go. Do it. Go for it. You know, it's not what's fascinating. What's wonderful about the genre of sci-fi and something else is that it's not just Sci-Fi Channel. Of course, it's maybe once upon a time that was the home for most of science fiction television, but now it's way every channel. People have discovered it. It's wonderful for those of us who love science fiction and appreciate it and want to imagine a different future, an alternative future. I mean, I, for example, love Man in the High Castle on Amazon. So season 2 is coming up in another week or so. That's just one example. You know, because you just had the EP of Mozart in the Jungle the Amazon show. It's a wonderful thing. I think what's interesting is that science fiction has still not hit theater. Now, I wrote a couple of years ago the off-Broadway sci-fi musical The Anthem, which was inspired by an Ayn Rand short story. And it did well, and it was critically acclaimed. In fact, the producer, Johnny Rockwell, is planning on mounting another production. But theater is one of the places where science fiction has not yet made all its inroads. I mean, maybe the time is coming for a Meridian musical. How about that?
How about that? We may negotiate. Who knows? We may negotiate the contract right here on the air. You never know.
Let's do it.
Madeline and the Meridians. Absolutely, Gary. Mad Mel and the Meridians. It's new science fiction on radio from Gary Morenstein. Here's where you go online. It's madmelsavestheworld.com. It's madmelsavestheworld.com. And incidentally, check out YouTube because more and more they're bringing some great radio drama and comedy onto their lineup. Check it out in their entirety. It's wonderful, wonderful radio and a great, great listening treat. Gary, a pleasure to have you back on. Congratulations on getting this new radio drama on the air. And all the very best for a long run with that. And like I said, maybe Sci-Fi, your former home, will see it as the next big show for 2017 or beyond.
Terrific, John. Simon, I'm counting on you.
All right, you got it, Gary.
Take care, man. Happy holiday.
You too. All the greatest. Gary Morenstein joining me here in New York. And speaking of science fiction, Les Brown, about 15 years ago, did Sci-Fi's Anyway miniseries Taken. Now he's doing a new series called Shut-Eye. It premieres on Hulu tomorrow, and we will have him on as the greatest executive of that show Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Tomorrow We Televise. If you came in on the show already and you want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. That's blogtalkradio.com/televise. And don't forget to check out the podcast version. It's available 24/7 at iTunes.com, just like Gary Morenstein's sci-fi show is. Or you can check it out the Apple TV iTunes podcast app. If you have Apple TV 2.0, if you don't, go to an Apple store near you around the country. Or order it online. We love hearing from you, so email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and where you're from. You can also get involved in our customer question of the week. If there's a TV show you like you think deserves attention, let us know. We'll highlight in our ongoing feature show to know and give you the credit for it. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. And we love hearing from you. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Till is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very venture, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Appledown in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Tuesday and the week. We're back with you on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, with Les Fulham from Hulu's new series, Shut-Eye, which premieres tomorrow. That's 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio. Be safe and be great out there. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.